It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here in the studio where I have spent an hour so far today talking to people. And we're going to spend another one together, and we're going to talk about all kinds of things that are going on these days because, you know, things are just kind of wild and wacky out there sometimes. We had a bad month that just passed, but it passed in good style, I might say. Kind of a little optimism flip on the tail end of it that helped. I think everybody needed it. It was getting a little stale. Well, I'll let Adam talk about that in a little bit. Meanwhile, welcome to everybody, all the regulars. We always appreciate you being here. And the new people, if you just heard about it or found it or got whatever brings you here, stick around for an hour, and I promise you, you'll always learn something. No matter how useless or useful, you will learn something. Let's face it, knowledge is always worth something. So don't be afraid to pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and we will put you on air. All right, this week, as I said, a nice little optimistic uptick at the end of the month that helped my attitude, I know.
Yeah, and it was also nice to kick September off on a positive note.
Yeah, true, too.
September isn't always the best month for stocks. In fact,
quite the opposite.
It's actually the worst month for stocks. It's the only month in which the Dow has averaged a decline over the last 20, 50, and 100 years. Mm-hmm. How about that for a statistic?
That's sad.
Yeah. December has averaged a decline of 1% over the last 100 years. Well, the only other month to average a decline is May, and that is just a 0.1% decline. So it's the winner by quite a wide margin.
Well, those of us who are glass half full people say, you know, for 10 months out of the year, the long-term average of the market is up.
Yeah, and that's why
it is true.
That's why long-term investing works.
Yep.
Every other month has a gain, and that doesn't mean that this September will be a bad month. We don't know. There are Septembers that where the market goes up.
Isn't it something like 40% of them?
Yeah, 38 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
So
Don't rule it out.
Yeah, I have said that, but it doesn't mean that we're going to see a terrible September. In fact, I believe maybe outside of even last year might have been positive. I can't remember.
I don't remember either.
But that's right around when the market started to turn last year was this September-October timeframe. So I actually think September was down and October was up, perhaps.
But. Yeah, people are afraid of October, too, but it's not as scary. If you're old enough, there might be reason to be afraid of October. But if you are a statistical long-term investor, don't worry about October.
Yeah. No,
it'll take care of itself.
It will. And actually, the best three-month time span of the year in the market is October, November, December.
Yep.
So even if we see a bad September, don't get too worried. The fourth quarter is usually the strongest of the year. So we have that to look forward to, hopefully. We did kick off September on mostly the right foot this year. The Dow was up 0.3% on Friday. The S&P was up 0.2, and the NASDAQ fell just 3 points. So pretty okay start to the month. For the week, though, it was a very good week. The Dow was up 1.7%. The S&P was up 2.5%. And the NASDAQ was up 3.2%. So really, really strong end of the August timeframe, especially after the kind of terrible August that we had had. So August was not a good month for many asset classes.
That might win the understatement of the day award.
Hopefully you weren't too heavily invested in international stocks, bonds, or utilities, because those three were pretty terrible. The all world except the U.S. ETF dropped almost 5% in August. Hong Kong took the lead as the worst market in the world and dropped a whopping 9.3% in August. Brazil was down almost 9%. China was down 7.8%. I hope you took our advice and steered clear of China. We've been kind of hinting strongly at that or just outright saying it on the radio for quite a few months now. So hopefully you took that advice. Bonds were down in August, not as much as international stocks, but the overall bond market was down about 0.75%. Long treasuries fell almost 3.5%, while shorter treasuries were actually up just a hair, 0.4%. The S&P fell just 1.6% in August, but the utility sector was down over 6%. And the reason you're seeing that happen right now is that utilities are a defensive sector, and they are known for paying strong dividends. But guess what? They don't pay 5% dividends.
Nope.
So right now, owning a treasury is a lot more attractive than owning the utility sector, and you're seeing a lot of defensive positions move out of utilities and go into treasuries or money market funds or whatever their choice is to get that 5 to 5.5% yield. It's a very good time to be a bond or safe investor. Better than it's been in the last, I don't know, 13, 15 years probably.
About that, yeah. I'd say 15.
Yeah. And that's why you're seeing that happen. The second worst sector was consumer staples, and that was down just under 4%. Again, another defensive sector, and the rotation was out of that and into more growth.
And just adding further fuel to the confusion that is, where is this economy going?
It's tough to figure out. The only sector that was positive was energy. That was up a little over 1% during August. So wrapping up August, it was bad. That's my summary.
I'd say you nailed it.
Yeah. The big news this week was the jobs report, which came out on Friday, and it was just slightly ahead of expectations, but below where it's been for most of the year. And once you get past the headline number, it was even worse. The headline number was 187,000 jobs versus an expectation of 170,000. But why I said it's worse than that is that June and July were revised down by 110,000 jobs.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm doing this by memory, but 1 month ago today, weren't we saying the same thing, that the downward revisions were massive?
Yeah, we were. So that makes you wonder.
What are they doing? Do we have new statisticians, or is there a political bent when these jobs numbers come out? That's the curiosity I have.
You asked that question, but honestly, I don't think it's that, because these job numbers, they actually want them to be worse than they've been coming in, because they don't want more rate hikes. So
that's a point.
It doesn't really fit that. But otherwise, you would wonder if there was some cook in the books going on.
Yeah, this is an unusual amount of correcting lately.
I mean, that's a huge correction, 110,000. Yeah. That brought the net gain down to just 77,000, yeah. less than half of the headline number. So pretty bad.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reason to have a little sigh of relief out there, because the Fed is sort of getting a license to, if nothing else, just pause.
Yeah, well, that and the unemployment rate ticked up from 3.5 right. to 3.8%. And as meaningless as that is, it's still a number that people pay attention to.
Apparently, a lot of people are running out of their old COVID cash now, because something like, 700,000 people came back into the workforce last month. And that hasn't happened for a good long time. The participation rate went up 0.2%. last month, and that hasn't happened for an even longer time. So I don't know for sure yet, as cloudy as everything has been lately, where are we going to go? Not quite sure.
Don't know.
But I wouldn't be panicking in either direction, the need to get in or the need to get out. I'm just not seeing it right now. All right, we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have the lines open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Well, since I spent the first hour today talking real estate with Angela, thought I'd do something about real estate and money. How many hours does the average person need to work to pay the mortgage each month? That with a 20% down payment when you buy the house. How many hours a month does it take to pay the mortgage? And it can be, it's just a round number between zero and the number of hours you work in a month. That narrowed it right down, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought so. All right. wrap up a little bit talking about the market?
Yeah, there was some other jobs-related data that came out this week. The JOLTS report, or Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, it came out. It showed that job openings dropped to their lowest level in 2.5 years. So despite that, there are still 1.5 jobs open for every unemployed person in the country right now. Historically, the level that economists look for to signal that we're not in an inflationary environment is one job per person looking. So we're still well above that. And the headline number is now just 8.8 million open jobs. That sounds like a lot, but it was 14 million recently. So that's a big trend in the
Not that many people got jobs in that time either.
Right. So it's you would normally say that's bad news, but in terms of the environment we're in and the Fed looking for an excuse not to raise rates anymore, that number is a very good number for them to point to say we don't need to raise rates anymore.
Yeah, that said, there was a little slight tick up in the PCE annual number. That's the one the Fed likes to use for an inflation gauge. You know, 4.2 to 4.3, no biggie. But it's a significant thing if you're looking for 2%, and the Fed is trying to stick with its 2% estimate of inflation before they start bringing these rates back down again. Actually, during one of the breaks today with Angela, we were talking about the fact that historically, interest rates are kind of where they have been over a long, long period of time. It's just that in the last few years, we have gotten so spoiled with the zerps and the nerps and the zeros and ones and all that stuff. And that reminded me of something. I was thinking about this on the way in today, and I'm not sure why it came up in my feeble brain, but it did. Wonder how many CDs are sitting out there, 3-year, 4-year, 5-year range, with a year or two or three left on them, that are paying 1% or less. You know, people, there is a penalty for turning in a CD.
Do it.
But there's also a big reward these days.
That's actually a great point. If you should take if you're doing a financial inventory, which you should do every once in a while, and you find you have some of those old 1% CDs, I would be willing to guess that it's going to be in your best interest to turn those in and pay the 3-month interest penalty or whatever, if it's something like that, and replace them with a new CD yielding a lot closer to 5%, and you're going to make that 3 months back in about a month.
You will make more money per month in short-term bonds and CDs and such right now than you made through an entire year not very long ago. So that's something to think about. Any of you out there who have some old CDs, laddered CDs, whatever, and you look at what you could do with that money, don't be afraid to break into them. That penalty, I'd throw $2 in a wastebasket before I'd keep a 1% CD another year.
No doubt. It doesn't make any sense in this current environment. Nope. There's just too many great products out there that you can get that will pay you a lot more.
All right. Market wrapped?
That was all I had for that. The jobless claims looked good again. The job market, and anecdotally, I'm hearing it is definitely changing and becoming harder to get a job in the professional ranks than it was even just a few months ago. Now, that's, again, just friends who are looking are telling me this, but it seems to coincide with what we're seeing in the actual national data as well.
Well, if you want some more proof, how much have you been hearing lately about companies and governments demanding that people start coming back to the office?
A lot. And why is that?
Because
they can.
Who's got the force now?
Yep, for sure.
The big hammer is no longer with the employee sitting home on his computer.
Was it you that told me Goldman Sachs demanded everyone 5 days a week back in the office?
Yep. And Amazon, 3 days.
Okay.
And the CEO of Amazon just sort of, I'd say, put it in perspective. Or this might not work out very well for you. Okay. I'd be listening if I were you people.
Definitely.
He's asking 3 days. Come on.
Yeah, that's pretty reasonable, honestly. Yeah. Well, and that new hybrid
5 days is 5 days. That's what you're paid for.
That hybrid model of some days in, some days work from home is becoming very popular. So don't be surprised if your employer starts moving to that as well.
Right. And if you work in an environment where one day like Friday afternoon is a real bear from a traffic standpoint, use that as your home day.
Definitely.
It's not something that you can't work with day to day. And I'm losing any real compassion I have for people who just say, no, I'm not going back. Too bad, people. You want a job? That's it. All right. In sports in particular, there's a term that was coined in the last few years called the GOAT, greatest of all time. There is what I consider a GOAT when it comes to retirement plans. His name is Ed Slott. He writes a newsletter. I've referred to him and about him many, many times. I've read his newsletter since it came out, and I always learn something. And a funny thing about goats, they sometimes lay an egg, too. I guess maybe they don't really lay an egg, but this goat did. Ed came out with a piece of advice that I find just unfathomable. He said it is time to stop contributing to your 401k and your IRA in favor of doing it all with a Roth. Now, first off, I have an aversion to anything in finance where it says putting it all or put all of this or do this in general, because diversification, flexibility, all those things are important. But he says he is so convinced that interest or that tax rates are going up that you will wind up losing money by putting tax deductible money into your funds. And I say, how? What were you eating, drinking, or smoking that day, Mr. Slott? Because it just doesn't make any sense to me. Why? Because, A, I love the bird in the hand. Bird in the hand is a tax deduction right now. If you're in the 10 or 12% tax bracket, well, what are they now, 12 and 15, the two lower ones, or 10, 12, whatever?
10, 12.
If you're not up into the 30s, then you might want to reconsider and maybe think Roths, but that depends on things too.
It does.
But if you're saving more than 30% in taxes on your investment and your retirement plans, to me, that isn't even as good as a 50-50 coin toss about whether it's going to be even better.
I agree. Most people in the 10 and 12% tax brackets aren't maxing out their 401ks either.
That's so correct.
Some do. If you have a spouse that works or you have a really, really, really meager lifestyle, you could do it. But the cost of living these days makes it almost prohibitive to max out 401ks when you're not making a lot of money.
Well, and if your home is paid for, things like that, yeah, and you have a little excess cash flow, then yeah.
There are people that can do it, but it's just unusual. But
that's rule by exception.
Yeah. So most people that are considering these things with the maximum amount of money you can put away are in those higher tax brackets. And therefore, I just think that advice doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, his arguments, and they do hold water. They just don't hold water when he says for everybody. It's a good bet that tax rates will be larger in the future.
Well, it's a scheduled right now in 2026, so that doesn't mean that will actually happen. There's a lot of things that can change between now and then.
It's absolutely true.
We don't know the outcome of the next election, and that is going to have a big, big determining factor in future tax rates.
Now, there are a handful of very vocal people out there saying that we need to repeal that sunset, and I absolutely agree with them. And I got a funny feeling when people find out that they're being faced with a very sudden tax increase after 2025, there's going to be some real political pressure put on. I'm not saying that I absolutely disagree with his theory that tax rates will be higher, but I don't think it's anywhere near the slam dunk that he apparently believes it is. Next one, RMDs will be higher in the future using traditional contributions. In other words, your account value will be higher using a traditional because you got the tax deduction so you can put more in on balance. And that, to me, I'm going to skip that till after the break. We only have a few seconds. I'll come back in on it. We'll pay some bills. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have lines open, 904-222-8255, and the trivia question is still available. How many hours a month does the average worker have to work just to pay the mortgage? Some round number of some sort. All right, we're talking about required minimum distributions and Ed Slott's recent article that both Adam and I are taking umbrage with. There are assumptions that you can make and apply them across the board. I would never advocate anybody doing that. There is nothing more personal, I guess, than someone's financial situation. And if you make blanket statements, you're likely to disappoint someone soon. We talked about the possibility of higher tax rates. You notice with the tax rate schedules we've been having, the term they're using is broadening them. In other words, you don't move up to the next tax rate for a very long time now, income-wise.
Yeah.
They're getting really big. What have we figured, about 200 or about, was it 100 for a
so
couple
you can
before?
Stay in the 12% bracket. It's generally around $100,000 for a married couple.
Okay. And one of the cool things about that is that their capital gains are free at the lower tax rates. But also remember that when you take that capital gain, it adds to your income.
It does, so you got to be careful with
that. Yeah, you got to be enough under that it's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, that's if you go $1 over.
Yeah, then it's all done. Yeah,
you lose that.
We're going to talk in a minute here about Roth conversions. We used to have it made in the Roth conversions because you could wait till after the first of the year, do the math, and unconvert, recharacterize, as they said. Some of it, we can't do that anymore. So you got to really do your planning right in the later months of the year now. Okay, RMDs will be higher in the future using traditionals. The argument there is you have more money to put in, the account will be bigger, so it grows bigger, and when you have to take it out, the RMD will be bigger. Therefore, your tax bill will be higher. Nothing I said there was untrue, necessarily. It's just that I kind of think on the so what basis. I want more money instead of less money.
Yeah. It depends, again, on your tax rate now versus your tax rate later. A lot of people have less income in retirement and therefore are in lower tax brackets, even if even if taxes go up. If you're, let's say they move the 12% to 15% bracket, and so you're going to have to pay 15 in the future. If you're in the 30% bracket now, doesn't it make more sense to pay 15 later? I think so.
Yeah. You know where else this comes in? Yeah, interesting. On rental properties, a lot of people buy rental properties because they love the tax break they get from the mandatory depreciation on them. So annually, you take some kind of a tax deduction. What rate are you saving? Because by statute, when you sell that place, all of that accumulated depreciation comes back to you that year, taxable at 25%. So if you're not saving at 25% or more, this is not really a good deal. It's just something to think about.
It is if you hold on to it until you pass and then you give it to your heirs.
Absolutely. Yeah, I will never argue that one. All right, the RMD start dates have also been pushed back. And who knows, they might get pushed back again. Got more money working for you during that time.
The RMD got pushed back, and also the mandatory Roth catch-up got pushed back a couple years. I think we mentioned that last
week. That's a good thing, too. All right. He also argues inherited accounts for non-spouses have RMDs that must be taken. Now, that it depends on the age of the person deceased, But it's either every year until 10 years is up and then you drain it, or not until the 10th year and then you have to drain it. Well, instead of scattering those payments, over a lifetime, he's right. There is a shorter time to drain that account. But this may sound a little callous, but in my humble opinion, when an inheritance takes place and someone gets that money and now has to go on the 10-year plan or whatever, the person who created the account is dead and doesn't care anymore. I'm not setting up my financial life for Adam and Maggie and Annie. And I'd say that right in front of him because he knows that. I would love it if there's some leftovers and they get them, but I'm not setting it up for one of the purposes being to maximize what they're going to get. So, frankly, I don't care about that one. I think it's kind of a specious argument. So there's another point, too. Let's say you get on now toward that time when you're going to have to start withdrawing. There is a product out there called a QLAC, a Qualified Longevity Annuity Contract, and you can get one of those up to $200,000. And when you take that, you buy the product from your retirement funds, and then you specify on the way in what year you want to start taking required minimums from it. You can be as old as 85. But let's say you're turning 73, and so you're going to have to take a distribution. Well, before that happens, you put $200,000 out of your 401k or IRA into a QLAC, and then your RMDs between then and the maturity date are cut down by whatever percentage it is of $200,000. So it's a bit of a manipulative process there. There's also, anywhere along the way, let's say you retire before you reach RMD age, you don't have to, but you can do Roth conversions on those. And we've been doing a lot of this lately with people trying to figure out how to manage a Roth conversion. You can't make a mistake. As Adam just said, you go $1 over and it just all falls apart.
No.
So you've got to be cautious, careful, intelligent, and well-versed in what's going on. But the point is, if you retire, let's say retire at 65 and don't have an RMD till 73, you got a lot of years in there where your income is likely to drop substantially, where doing a piece of the Roth conversion every year will benefit you in more ways than it will by taking it up front while you're working. Because paying your working tax rates, not a lot of fun for most people. So I just like to read these things and figure out what's right and what's wrong about them, because it frankly makes everybody a little more knowledgeable, and I think we do a better job as planners because of that. So I brought it up. All right, dumb stuff. How's that? Want some dumb stuff? I have a couple. The SEC files charges in a billion-dollar get-rich crypto scheme. Who knew? Promising returns of up to 38% and spending $12 million of his clients' dollars on houses and boats and cars and stuff.
Who was that, an advisor? Or
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Remember the first day we talked about crypto?
No.
I do. You were sitting where you're sitting. I was sitting where I was sitting. And your immediate response is, not on my watch. And I can't tell you how many times I have thought about that and how right we were.
It's been a wild ride in crypto.
It really has. I've got another one here I wanted to pull out. It's about NFTs. Yeah. NFTs, non-fungible tokens. I remember the first time we talked about that, mm-hmm. too. And I said, essentially, what?
Yeah, I know. It's a weird concept.
Yeah, and you explained it to me, and I still didn't understand it. A little dense, apparently, sometimes. NFT route crushes $1.5 billion windfall for artists because the markets are slashing royalties now. So you're saying that these very valuable things that you paid lots of money for are no longer.
What a surprise.
Shocking. What could possibly go wrong? a non-fungible token. Fungible refers to money. Non-money, you might call it.
Yeah, it's basically the digital rights to digital art. And it's essentially just your name on the blockchain as the owner. It's such a weird concept, and it got so big, and people were going nuts, spending millions of dollars on these things.
Apparently billions.
Yeah, it actually was billions. And I meant individually, They were spending $1 million on single tokens to have digital ownership of something. And who could have thought that wouldn't work out well?
Just unfathomable. Let's see. It's a short-sighted strategy, neglecting the fact that a sustainable success in the space is built on a delicate balance of empowering both traders and creators. Okay. That one went in the circular file real fast. Told you so. Audit reveals improper payments from the feds just reached $500 billion under this president.
Improper. What does that mean?
People didn't deserve it. 17 agencies reported improper payments. It can be anything from Social Security payments on down. That they're not going to the right people. And, of course, a lot of that came from the COVID money.
Yeah, I'm sure.
COVID money was really misapplied a great deal. In 2010, it was $242 billion. Then it decreased for a while, and then it jumped back up again. Social Security paid nearly $42 million to about 500 dead people during 2018 alone. Now, if we're always so desperate for money in this country, and some people want to raise taxes, how about we just don't waste it like that?
That's not a bad idea.
Didn't seem to me it would be. I got a bunch of these little things. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, we got something coming in on the phone lines. Oh, it's 1:45. Romaine, do we have a full minute? I might be able to set up the call. All right, hang on. Good morning. I don't know if you heard that, but we're short on time, so if we can set up your question and if you can go on hold for a couple minutes.
This is just very quick. I'm calling from Northern Michigan, Traverse City area.
Oh, nice.
I listen to you gentlemen. I guess I can wait. I hear the music if you want.
Yeah, just hold over the break and we'll
talk
pick you up
to
on the other side.
From Traverse City. Are you a big fan of Tudor Dixon?
Yes.
She has some roots up there. But we have a client who told us the other day that she is a real good friend of his family up in the Traverse City area. So I didn't realize that was part of her domain. All right, if we'll put you on hold and get right back to you as soon as the break is over.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, we're going to have to take another break and then we'll get into this. I hope it's kind of good stuff because that's a really, really beautiful part of the world.
It is. It's especially this time of year.
Yeah. Oh, I bet it's just delightful. So we'll find out very soon when we get to talk to Romaine. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And without any further delay, let's go back to the phone.
And to Northern Michigan.
Into Traverse City. Thanks for waiting.
This is me. No, thanks. Thanks for allowing me on.
Sure.
Enjoyed your shows for many months. Like I say, if not, maybe a little over a year. Even from way up here in Traverse City, Michigan.
Well, I certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, you get the long distance award for today.
Yeah, 70 degrees right now. I think it's supposed to be a high around 80. I think yesterday was a balmy 81, I think.
Nice. Yeah, and with northern tier humidity, meaning not much, right?
Well, no, not really. Although I'm looking across the... We have a little farm, and it sits near some lakes. And so from a spot on our farm, we can see three lakes.
Nice.
And so we have humidity a little bit. I mean, we have local moisture, but it's not anyway.
Cool.
You guys understand. No, we really enjoy it up here.
Great.
But we enjoyed it in the south as well for different reasons.
Okay.
Just a quick, I'll throw out 60 hours a month. Now we get that over with, and you can critique that. But the question was basically how would you compare local family-run? Oh, sorry, that's my little dog. She was sitting on my shoulder. All of 5 pounds, and, 6 years old. There she goes. Okay. Anyway, how would you compare a smaller, say, typically family-run financial services operations with, say, some of the big, you know, James Jones, Schwab's, et cetera, as far as their ability to, to manage local or individual accounts, individual family accounts?
Well, I guess the first thing that would come to mind is far superior.
Yeah.
You're not asking objective people here.
That is true. And
I realize that. And I also cannot get overly negative about anything because my name is out there now, and it's a rather unique name.
For the rest of the listeners, we did not pay him to ask that question.
No.
This is organic. But I think we would stack up really well against the big guys. There are advantages to going with the big guys, but I don't think they outweigh the advantages of working with a smaller office. The things that you get you might get access to products that are proprietary to that firm that pay a little bit higher rates on money markets and things and savings and checking accounts that you wouldn't normally get access to. You might get a concierge type service that can do things that are not financial related to you if you have enough money.
Some will do mortgages.
They will sometimes and even get you a preferred rate on a mortgage occasionally, or you might get access to hedge funds that we don't have access to. So there are definite advantages to going with the big guys, but for that you're going to be just one of thousands of clients, and you're probably not going to get the same person every time you call. And you're probably not going to get a quarterly meeting where you sit down face to face with your advisor. And so if you like that personal touch, that real meaningful relationship, I think that you're far better off going with a smaller firm. And to be honest, the portfolios I see when we take money from larger firms they never blow me away. I mean,
no.
They are typically underperform. I don't know. I've never been super impressed with what I see out of the investment choices coming from the bigger firms.
Yeah, I think one way to describe it is those people come to us, but our people don't leave for them.
I don't think we've ever lost a client to a big firm.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. How about the ability to pivot in say recently, if you happen to have forecasted a downturn such as we had last month, the ability to pivot and reinvest or reallocate, would you say that's faster with a smaller firm such as yourself?
I would, yeah. I think in a bigger firm, you're not even going to get much say in your portfolio. You're going to be part of a model portfolio type situation where they'll allocate you based on your risk tolerance, and that is going to be your portfolio. And there is there's not a lot of wiggle room with that. Whereas we don't do anything like that. It's 100% your money. It's customized to you. It can change at any time. I think you're going to get a lot more ability to pivot at a small firm. There's a reason that the RIA, which is the type of office that we have, that's the fastest growing part of the financial services industry right now. And I think the reasons that we're talking about right now are the reasons that is true.
And you're also likely to get more education, more qualifications, and more experience in the smaller firm. We both have master's degrees, and we're both certified financial planners, and you're not sure if you're calling a big firm who's going to pick up the phone and what advice you're going to get. Plus, we know pretty much everybody's preferences. We deal with about 130 people,
roughly about 130 families,
and we take care of each of them together. so we don't split them up. So I know all the people. Adam knows all the people. They know us. They know how to find us. It's much more family-oriented than any other form of business I've seen in finance. Okay. It's personal.
Well, I do appreciate your assessment. And the probably the likelihood of someone such as my, or with a distance such as the one that I have from yourself, probably you don't get people investing that far away, I would guess.
Ooh, I think you might be surprised.
Yeah, I think you might be surprised. Oh. We have, we're licensed in Texas and Louisiana. So we have clients there. We have a client in Hawaii. We have clients in South Carolina. So we have a client that bounces between Florida and Italy. Technology these days, it's really not it's just not as big of an issue as it has been in the past.
Sure. Okay. How about Michigan?
Yeah, we'd love to. Yeah. Set up an appointment.
We had one in Wisconsin. He up and died on me.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, hopefully not.
I'm prepared if it does.
No, but you can go on our website, VanWeFinancial.com, and book a meeting. Just choose either a phone format or a go-to-meeting format, and we'd be happy to sit down with you and discuss your situation. That'd be great.
Okay. And for the record, you have not sent me a check.
No checks. We did not pay you. This is not a paid advertisement. But it did work out really well. So
How did you find us? You said something about the South. Are you from this area?
Well, I was in the military at Gulfport, Mississippi, the CDs.
Okay.
My wife and I met 46 years ago there. And, we met. We're engaged 6 weeks later. 2 weeks after that, we were married. And 2 weeks after that, I was back in Southeast Asia.
Oh, wow.
For another 8 months.
46 years later, 40. Here you are.
Yep.
Here we are.
Yep, and we are.
On the way, but by God's grace, we're still there.
If you listen to the show for a while now, you probably know that we're from up near that area. And the only time of year that I really, really miss it is when the weather is still 90 degrees here in Jacksonville and it's 70 and crisp in the Midwest.
Yeah, we lived on the lake just south of Milwaukee, so we'd pull out the binoculars and look for you. But it was
we can look right west, southwest, just a little bit.
Yep, a little too far, but it.
Jacksonville is awfully nice in February. Oh my word!
Oh yeah,
January, February.
That is true.
And we really enjoy. We've got some relatives that live in the Jacksonville area also.
Good.
And so that's probably why I looked up financial services in the Jacksonville area.
Okay.
And shows when I was looking at podcasts. And that's what I've been listening to.
Good. Well, we appreciate
it. Actually, now your radio show.
Hopefully, we'll talk to you again soon.
Tell your friends.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much. We have another call.
Yeah.
Because we're about
to. I think it's just coming in now. So, Yep. I did want to mention I saw the dumbest article of the week, and the reason it is the dumbest article of the week is that it did my least favorite mix up of calling millionaires people that have $1 million income.
Yes.
How many times are they going to get this wrong?
I've got a related topic on that for next week.
Go ahead.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Who's calling?
This is Lane.
Oh, hey, Lane.
Oh,
out in the Panhandle, Florida.
Yeah. Did you get hit?
Oh, it's you.
Did you get hit
this
with
this? This is another unpaid ad just for your friend in Michigan.
Okay.
Just make sure he knows I'm 70 years old. I've been around the brokerage firms. There is absolutely no comparison. You will never find the service you guys give in a big firm.
Well, I appreciate
that.
That's
my statement.
I love unpaid advertising.
No doubt. We're almost out of time.
You got a few seconds. You want